You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics, and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting, marketing, or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA and a CFP and an AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online at wdiy.org. You can also find out membership options at WDIY, whereby you could get emails that weekly tell you what's coming up on the shows that we have here. And you will get alerts to what we're going to be talking about on Your Financial Choices as well. So check out WDIY.org. Today is June 19th, 2013. The markets were down today. The Dow closing at 15,112, the NASDAQ at 3443, and the S&P at 1628. You know, I just want to make one comment. I heard on CNBC at the close, they said, the market was severely down today, severely. I'm thinking it's still over 15,000, folks. The drama that is driven by these people on these shows is just crazy. I mean, I think you should all be thrilled it's over 15,000. So why do we worry about these daily dips where people are reacting to this world that we have where it's instantaneous news and you just got to understand what's going on and try to be alert and all of that, but try not to react to the drama that's driven up. So I just had to make that comment. Last week we discussed rental real estate. So we talked a little bit about if you were thinking about owning and what you need to pay attention to when you're considering real estate as an investment option. We talked a little bit about, you know, getting financing for that and keeping track of the income, different kinds of income, expenses, and that type of thing. Tonight, we are going to talk about life phase planning for blended families. And if you don't know what blended families are, basically what we're talking about is probably maybe two-thirds of the families nowadays where you have spouses who come into a second marriage, maybe bring children, maybe from one of the spouses, maybe both of the spouses, maybe you have children together, maybe you had one has children, one doesn't have the children together. I mean, it's just crazy. The blended families can go on and on, and it's all different kinds of combinations. So we're going to try to talk a little bit about some framework about looking at life phase planning for that to help you consider what you need to pay attention to and how to structure your financial life for that. So we hope that you stay tuned. It does affect quite a few people these days, so we thought it was an important topic. While it is a gorgeous evening this evening, you could sit in your car, drive around, listen to the radio, listen to WDIY while you're listening to the show, and maybe we'll learn a few things together. If you have questions this evening, we are live. You can call in. If you're comfortable talking on the air, Joe is answering the phones and he will put you right through to me. If you're not comfortable talking on air, he'll take down your information and bring that into me in the studio and we'll do our best to answer the questions. Remember that if you are calling in, you need to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And the number to call in is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com, but I'll have to answer emails at another time, but won't be tonight. So the phone number 610-758-8810 and email at yourfinancialchoices.com. Tonight's topic, life phase planning for blended families. So as we probably all know, without even going to research statistics, we should know that statistics are high for divorce. And consequently, we're seeing more and more blended families. Blended families, again, typically marriages ending in divorce that have children in some capacity. Blended families may arise when a husband with children marries a woman who is never married or has no children, and vice versa. Or you may have a widow or widower who marries after having raised the children, and now those children are adults. Or you may have couples where both spouses are divorced and both bring children to the marriage. Okay, so a number of different scenarios. It might be a little less complicated blending families if one of the parties doesn't have children. That might seem fairly easy. Okay, so you have maybe a husband who has two kids from a prior marriage, and he marries someone who's never been married, a wife, who doesn't have children. That might appear to be a little bit less complicated. You're not having to worry about, you know, shifting things between children. But that newly married couple may end up having a child together. And what may have seemed to be less complicated can become very complicated, at least to those prior children. Emotional issues abound, especially for the children. I mean, emotional issues can occur with even the spouses, but especially for the children. Even when those same children turn into adults, we still have those vulnerable feelings around self-worth and importance in the eyes of our parents. I see it all the time. How many of us go home for the holidays and we go see our elderly parents? We're adults now. You get the family together. What happens when you go home? You're sitting around the table. You fall back into some of these roles. You become that little child again. Even though you're an adult, you've lived your own life, all of a sudden, you know, maybe mom's asking you to, you know, help clear the table or take the garbage out. And, you know, you're saying, well, you know, I'm talking to my sister here. I don't really feel like doing that right now. Well, come on, you know, sometimes we fall back into those roles. Sometimes it's hard to let go of emotional scars that we have from when we're children, you know, whether we're in a blended family or not, that occurs. So when you're working with blended families, or if you are part of a blended family, there are emotional issues, relationship issues, and all of that baggage or gifts still needs to be addressed as well. But we also have to talk about some of the, you know, financial situations around that too, because a lot of times financial pressures impact the emotional issues we have, that self-worth, that importance, because sometimes finances give us a measure of our self-worth. If we see that our dad is now giving all of his money to his new child or his new wife, you know, maybe that makes us feel, you know, like we're not loved anymore. And that could be when we're, you know, 13 when this new marriage occurs, or it could be when we're 30 and the new marriage occurs. So we need to start paying attention, looking at the financial implications and taking hold of all of that to alleviate conflict in the future. So these are some of the things we're going to talk about tonight. I'm going to give you a couple scenarios, and then I want to talk about various phases that a blended family can anticipate. But the goal here would be to understand what those phases are before we enter into the marriage. Think this through, be proactive. Let's think through those phases and how we want those phases to look. What can we anticipate those phases to look like, both emotionally and financially? And then how can we plan for it proactively instead of reactively? But then you may be listening and you might say, Lori, we're already, you know, married. We didn't do any of this planning. We were just so in love. We just did it. And now we're, you know, maybe going through some repercussions of that. Well, there's always usually still planning that you can do. So as we go through the show, we're going to talk about those different phases and how to structure planning around those. If you have questions this evening, we are live and Joe is answering phones. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Hey, it's us, Click and Clack from Car Talk. Is your car so environmentally incorrect that it creates its own ecosystem?
Donate it through the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program.
This station gets the proceeds and you get a tax break.
To find out more, call 866-789-8627.
Car Talk airs Friday night at 6 p.m. and Saturday at 10 a.m. For more information, visit our website at wdiy.org.
And we are back on this lovely evening. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert. We're talking about life phase planning with blended families. I'm going to give you a few scenarios, and then we're going to talk about life phase planning for blended families and trying to be proactive in our planning. If you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. So to set the stage, and this might ring a bell to some people, I want to give a couple scenarios because you hopefully you'll start to see how some of this can play out. So two scenarios. First scenario, single younger woman with no children marries an older man with adult children. Younger wife and older husband have a child or children together. Think Rod Stewart. If the husband comes into the relationship with all the financial resources, the older adult children may get cut out of any inheritance that they might have thought they were going to get because they know dad's resources will be redirected toward the new wife and the new children. So again, in this scenario, young wife marries older man has adult children, they're on their own, they're kind of independent. Maybe dad's thinking it shouldn't matter. My kids are off on their own. I raised them. They don't need anything from me. And that may very well be the case. But consider if that's going to be some friction or cause some kind of emotional issues or strain on relationships. So I think by looking at our scenario and then trying to say, how can we structure what we're doing today in such a way to avoid, you know, conflicts down the road. So again, everyone might be fine with it, but by planning for it ahead and having the conversations about it, it will limit expectations and the stress of not knowing how the new relationship's going to affect what I would call like the traditional model. So let's say dad is 60 and kids are 30 and dad worked really hard. Maybe his time with these adult children wasn't all that much when they were young because he was so busy working and earning and trying to raise them and, you know, put them through college. But, you know, maybe sometimes kids feel like dad owes them something. And, you know, whether you could debate that, but I'm just saying this is some of the relationships, you know, how they exist. So all of a sudden, dad marries someone, maybe another 30-year-old, and now they have a child. What happens to those adult children? How does that feel? Does that dad expect that there should be any income or any of the assets that he built up at their expense by not spending time with his adult children when they were little? Is there any expectation that he would want to do something for them? So something to think about. Scenario two, divorced woman and divorced man. They both have children. The children of the woman live in the home. She's the custodial parent, we say. The children of the man live with their mother. So now this divorced man has child support obligations for his children. And maybe the divorced woman who he has now married may not be getting her child support. What happens with this man? He may start to feel a little stressed. There may be friction. He will feel like he's supporting both families. He has to grapple with who is he supporting, the children that are now in his home that his wife is, you know, the custodial parent of. How much money are they getting? And yet he's having to pay out support for his children who may not be living with them. So all of a sudden we start having friction that we might not have planned for when we fall in love and marry this woman and we're just so happy. And, you know, the kids are used to being with their mother and, yes, I'll take care of your children because I'll do anything to get you. And all of a sudden, you know, friction might, you might start feeling that pressure. And in my examples, I apologize if I'm using men as the moneymakers and the wives as the caretakers. It's just easier when we're talking. But it could very well be the reverse. I've seen that as well, where the woman is the moneymaker. So you need to kind of talk about these scenarios to see if they're, if you can anticipate where there could be little hiccups. So in this one, the husband marries a woman with children. He has his own children somewhere else. He's paying child support for them. Now he's, you know, basically raising these kids that aren't technically his. And in essence, he's supporting maybe both families. And then all of a sudden, there's going to be conflict of, oh, you bought this one, that. You bought this one, that. They got nicer clothes than me. They got an iPad. They got this. They got a phone. Who's paying for what? All of a sudden, lots of friction. The reason I say that it could be that the second wife's not receiving child support is because, according to a U.S. Census Bureau, only 61% of child support is actually paid. So you also need to understand proactively before you get into relationships what obligations you may end up having. Because just because someone was married prior and could be entitled to child support, it doesn't mean that the child support's going to be there. So again, it could be fine. You could be ready and have the wherewithal, the ability, the financial resources to support two families. You just need to make sure you're ready for that and what that's going to entail. And then also anticipate that there could be a little bit of competition, jealousy, emotional scars with the children and trying to keep everyone even, because that's what starts to happen. Kids, you know, are looking for fairness. It's just nature. All right. So they may start thinking they're the favorite children, and it could cause emotional scars. So what can you do to try to circumvent some of this? Have conversations. So start by having open conversations, not only about the emotional issues involved, but the financial issues as well. So the emotional issues, I'm sure there's lots of resources out there. A lot of people, I find, don't go for, you know, counseling or emotional help, but I'm sure that there's books out there that you could find, websites, resources where you can find information about how to have these conversations, talking about what is the new family going to look like, how are we going to spend time with each other, how do we make this all work. And it's much healthier in the long run for everyone. So we have to have conversations around who will be physically responsible for the children, but also who will be financially responsible for them. And then how long are we financially responsible? And what does that include? Is it going to include college? Is it going to include weddings? Because I'm telling you, a lot of times people will say, well, I only have to pay child support until my children are 18. Well, that's all and good, but typically, we like to try to encourage our children to further their education. It helps with jobs in the future. It helps you keep jobs longer. So a college expense is a huge, huge expense. So if your one set of children, maybe from the first marriage, are getting closer to college age, and now you have this new family with like little babies running around the house, how are you going to balance that? Is there any expectation that you should balance that? Well, maybe not if you've had the conversations early enough to set the stage with the children that you're going to have to work with them on financial aid or with loans. What are you committed to helping them with? Do they need to get jobs? That type of thing. So you want to start having those conversations sooner than later. Tonight we're talking about life phase planning with blended families. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We're going to talk about the different phases, and then we're going to talk about some ideas for structuring financial titling and options for you with your blended family and taking care of everyone. Again, if you have questions, 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY Allentown, listener-supported community public radio. Lehigh Valley weather, current conditions, 77 degrees under partly cloudy skies. Tonight, clear, lows around 46. Thursday and Friday, sunny skies, highs around 80 degrees. And Saturday, slight chance of thunderstorms with highs around 81 degrees. Folks, the time now is 6:21 p.m. Now back to your financial choices with our host, Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Jeff. Folks, if you have questions this evening, Joe's in the studio taking your calls. The phone number is 610-758-8810. You can also send questions through the website yourfinancialchoices.com. We are talking about life phase planning for blended families, about having open conversations, productive conversations, and hopefully proactive before you get into a relationship where you're combining families. But again, these conversations can occur at any time. Really, it's just probably the easiest to structure all of this if you do it before you get married. However, a lot of times people rush into things. They're not realizing all the complications that can come when you combine a family. So it's not too late for you if you are part of a blended family right now. If you have not done estate planning, if you have not done cash flow planning, and even income tax planning, folks, because you have to talk about who's claiming the children, who's taking them as dependents, what happens if your income situations change, are you on good enough terms with the prior spouse that you can talk about maybe mixing up who's claiming the children and when, because that is one thing that spouses can do. They can kind of give away the exemption. So there's certain planning you can do around these things, but it's always good to have that figured out ahead of time about being proactive. So one of the things I suggest is when you're in a relationship is sitting down and having a conversation with the soon-to-be spouse or potential spouse or spouse now, if it works out that way. Sit down, have a conversation, and make up a statement of your values and your goals relating to the financial support of the family. That will help you a lot. And when I talk about having a statement of your values, I think it's really important that you then are able to communicate this to the children in such a way, and even adult children, in such a way that they understand you're a united front, that you have taken the time to stop and consider this union and how it will eventually affect them as well, and how it's all about loving each other and loving the spouse and loving the children and making sure that you're communicating to them that you've taken the time, that they're that important, that you're taking the time to sit down and talk about what this is going to look like. So, for example, what if new children come into the relationship? Why not put that on the table if that's a possibility? Otherwise, everyone ends up tiptoeing around these things. How will the support of the prior children be affected? That could be a concern your teenagers might have. If all of a sudden they see you getting involved with someone, they might think, what's going to happen to me? Who's going to buy my prom dress? Who's going to buy my new car? my first car, that kind of thing. It's good to have these conversations. Are adult children on their own financially? Is it important to provide for them in the event of death? How will you split up the assets? Will they go to your new spouse, her children, your children together? So flush these questions out. So I'm going to go through the various phases of these scenarios that you can start to have the necessary conversations and break it down to manage it better. If you're capable of that, then the next step is to take a picture of your financial life. So first you kind of set up your values and goals and have these conversations. And then you will take a picture of your financial life. And it's really important to take that picture for each of your own situations so that you have a benchmark, because that may come into play. We might want to say, you know what, we're starting a clean slate together. Maybe we will have children together. So maybe we want to have assets separate that we're bringing into the marriage. Maybe not. I'm just saying we want to talk this through. Maybe his assets, her assets, and our assets from when we come together. So as you then think through the answers to these phases I'm going to talk about, then with that, you'll have the guidance on how to structure everything now. And then if necessary, how you need to revise or tweak your planning as you move through the phases. Let me give you a quick example, and I'll mention this again later. Quick example. Let's say you just get married and you have a pot of money, a huge pot of money, and you have children from a prior marriage, and you just get married. Now, this marriage could last 40 years or this marriage could last 1 year. So I'm not sure, even in this initial phase, that you might say, you know, I do want to take care of my spouse, but I really just married her. I mean, I've been divorced once before. I might divorce this person in another year or so. So maybe you don't want to plan on having all your assets pass to your surviving spouse if you were to die. So you want to have a plan that's going to give you flexibility to take care of your spouse or continue to take care of your children from a prior marriage if, you know, this new marriage ends shortly or quickly or whatever. Okay, so let's go through this. We're going to call this a life phase inventory. Phase one, near future with children. Remember, we're talking about blended families, so the near future with children. You need to discuss how you want it to look moving forward, keeping in mind that one spouse's children may be younger and may require additional financial support during this period and what that entails as to who is responsible for that, together or separate or some version of that. What if there's no child support from the non-custodial parent? What will happen if you have children together? So again, phase one, near future, we're thinking about getting married. We have children. Who's responsible for the children? Remember, who has physical custody and who has financial responsibility? Are we relying on child support from another spouse? What happens if we don't get that child support? Are we still going to be okay together? What happens if I have young children and maybe I have 4-year-old, 5-year-old, 6-year-old, and the husband I'm marrying has 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds? We're at very different phases. So in our near future, what is that going to look like? Are my husband's financial resources no longer going to be directed toward his closer to adult children, and they're going to be redirected to my young children? Again, there might be some offense there to these young adults who still might have the expectation that dad's going to be helping with things like college or a new apartment, the cell phone bill, paying for the cable, new clothes, taking them out to dinner. So phase one, near future with children, discuss how you want it to look moving forward. And again, who's going to have that financial responsibility for which children? Are we going to do it together? Are we going to do it separate? Or some variation of that, maybe some allocation, some percent. Okay, so that's phase one. We're going to talk about phase two, which would be the future after child support. Phase three, which is the surviving spouse options. And phase four, which is the heirs. And making sure that we've addressed all of those in our initial conversations and planning with that spouse that we now have in our blended family. If you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk and traditional music is a crazy quilt of colors and textures. In the tradition traces its many patterns and designs. Music handed down from generation to generation. In the tradition, Wednesday evening at 7 on WDIY FM Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio.
We are back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA and a certified financial planner and an accredited estate planner. We're talking about life phase planning for blended families, about the conversations that you need to have before you maybe venture into a blended family, or maybe conversations that you need to have if you're already in a blended family. Sometimes these conversations aren't easy to have. I think it's very important for, of course, the partners in the marriage to have the conversations first and foremost, and then to actually communicate with the children involved, be upfront, makes it much easier, reduces stress. I just think it's a great idea. Sometimes you get really good input and you get to feel the emotional issues that sometimes the kids are going to have. It's just much, much easier. I have been on the other end of these situations after someone has died, and it's just not always a pretty thing to go through. So I thought it was important to talk about this. In fact, I have a relative who came to me and asked me these questions, which prompted the topic for this show. She said, "Lori, what should we be thinking about?" And I kind of frameworked this out for her. And she just thought it was very powerful. And they've been able to move forward with a lot of the planning that they're hoping to do, and have been able to think about it while they can still be proactive instead of reactive. So they haven't taken the plunge yet, but they're being very smart about doing all of this ahead of time. So phase one, we talked about near future with children. Oh, I forgot the phone number. On this lovely, gorgeous evening. If you have questions, you can call in live and talk on air with me. Or if you're not comfortable talking live, you can give your question to Joe and he will write it down and bring it in to me. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We are talking about blended families. They are happening more and more. It should be a topic that should be regularly addressed. It's not addressed enough, and I can only think it's because it's not comfortable for people. So you just need to, you know, just do it. Just make these conversations, and it'll all be good. Better than if you hadn't, that's for sure. So phase one conversation is talking about what we want this to look like in the near future when we have children, and what happens if we have children together. Phase two, the future after child support. So going forward, how do you want each other financially supported during your marriage? It gets a little dicey when you still have children in the home and you still have financial support obligation for children. But all of a sudden, you know, when we kind of work through that, what we start to see, of course, when people become empty nesters, especially if they're still working, all of a sudden they can start accumulating a lot of income because they're not spending it on groceries and clothes for the kids and college for the kids. So all of a sudden they start accumulating money and can start spending it on themselves. But what do we want that phase to look like? So are we working towards saving together for retirement, or are we still keeping some separation of our assets and our cash for maybe our respective heirs? Because remember, we came into this relationship. I might have come in with assets. The husband might have come in with assets. During that period of raising the children, were we really guarded with that money? Did we hold on to it really tight? Were we careful with, you know, allocating it just right? No, he's spending more. I'm spending more. So at this time, now when we've moved beyond the phase of children, are we still doing that? Are we still embracing those habits that we had when we were raising the kids, where we're kind of watching what we're doing and how we're spending money on my children, his children, her children, blah, blah, blah. So you want to think about, before you get married, when you get to phase two, what do we want that to look like? And maybe even how long did it take before we got there? Because we might get to phase two in 2 years. Or if we got married with young children, phase two might not be for 20 years. So we want to talk about keeping pre-marriage accounts separate or not. Are we going to have a joint account? Are we going to have new joint accounts? Are we going to have a new joint account when we first get married and all of our new income goes in there? And if we save anything, then those are our assets together. Do we continue to keep everything separate? So those are the kinds of questions you need to answer. Phase three, what do we want that to look like? Surviving spouse options. So we want to plan today for the survivor, because what happens if we have a house together? If my husband and I are married and I don't have a blended family, but let's pretend I have a blended family. My husband and I are married and we've come together. We've bought a house jointly, or even he owns the home and I move into his home. He owns it outright when I get there, maybe. It's his house. He dies. What happens? Am I kicked out of the house? We need to know these things. What do we want that to look like? So if we're coming into a marriage with children, what is it going to look like when the children are gone and now one of us dies? That's the surviving spouse options. Do we want our surviving spouse to have the option to stay in the home? Maybe that's the only asset you had of any worth. Maybe you wanted your children to share in that wealth that you had, that you built up in that home that you bought. You might have provided that the house gets sold when you die and the assets get split amongst your children. Or you might want to say, I own that home, but I want my wife, my surviving wife, to live in that home until she dies. All of that has to be structured. All of that has to be spelled out in documents like your will or a trust or how you're titling your assets. Also, your retirement savings. What are your retirement savings going to look like? If you came into the marriage with tons and tons of money, do you want that to go to your children? Do you want it to go in some allocation to your children and your surviving spouse? And the thing is, those amounts could change over time. Let's pretend you end up being married for 40 years to the second wife. That might look very different than how you want that structured if you are just newly married. If you have $1 million IRA and you have 3 kids from a prior marriage, you marry someone, do you run right over to your employer and change the beneficiary to your new spouse? That might just not feel right that soon. So you want to think about, what is the surviving spouse option going to look like? Because that should be a concern too for anyone coming into this marriage. If they've maybe given up a job, given up their home, moved to a new place, what security do they have with the second marriage, with any assets that might be left? If I have to worry about my new spouse giving everything to his children, you know, then maybe I have to be more careful about what I'm doing with my assets or whether or not I should sell my home. So we've got to look at that. But at the same time, some people could be reasonable and I could say, well, I don't expect that my new husband with his million-dollar IRA is going to give that all to me. We've only been married, you know, a month, and he has three children. So we have to have some understanding of what that looks like. So that's phase three, surviving spouse options. There also might be things like a pension. So you want to know how that pension will work. If there was a divorce, new spouses, that might be something you have to pay attention to as well. Because sometimes if you're, and again, I'm going to use this example of husband. If the husband has a pension and he divorced, his ex-spouse may have a right to some of that pension. So you might be marrying this man thinking, oh, he's going to have a great pension. I'm going to be all set when he kicks off. Well, he may not have disclosed to you that some of that pension might have already been earmarked under a qualified domestic relations order or quadro. Some of that pension or some of that retirement account, 401k, might already be segregated for that divorced spouse. You need to make sure you get that all out on the table so you know what to expect. All right. You also want to know, or I guess I think you should have a conversation about whether or not you really would expect or would want to provide for your children. So my example, husband has $1 million IRA. He marries a new wife. He's raised his children. And he might say, you know what? I love this woman. She gave me the best year of my life. If I die today, I mean, I'm so grateful. I've never been happier in my whole entire life. I want her to have everything because I want her to be taken care of. I'm not going to give anything to my kids. Again, that's fine. You might not even feel like you have to explain yourself. But in this world of, as I believe, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, I think honesty is the better policy. You can, you know, have conversations with your kids saying, kids, I took care of you. I got you a good college education. You're successful in your careers. You've got good families. You're all set. Daddy's happy now, and daddy's going to make sure surviving stepmommy is taken care of. So have no expectations. We're going to talk about a little bit of ways that we can kind of still take care of everyone. We're going to talk about that as we get later into the show. But again, this is about having the conversation so we know how we want to structure our planning. We need to know what the expectations are, and again, about being proactive. All right. So phase four is the heirs. Phase four is we've already raised the children. We've already had our time after the children have been out of the house and we, you know, had all kinds of fun. We had the phase where one of us died. We had a surviving spouse. Now the second to die is gone. What is that going to look like? So phase four is both spouses are gone, and what kind of heirs are we going to have? And in this case, for example, if the surviving spouse retained rights to joint property or they had the right to stay in that home I mentioned earlier, what happens now that they've died? Is the property going to pass to all of the children, or to daddy's children, or to mommy's children, or to all of the children? Is it going to be equitable? One of the things that I see sometimes is that, let's say the husband dies first, and he wants to make sure his surviving spouse is taken care of, and that's all well and good, and she lives, you know, quite a while, and maybe she has title to property, and the understanding was that when she died, in her will, she said to all the children, we're a big happy family now. We're a big happy blended family, and we're going to give everything to everybody. We're going to share equally. So my three kids and, you know, her two kids, that's five kids. We're going to split the assets five ways. We agree to that. We go to the attorney together. We write up our wills. We're all very friendly. This looks great. Well, when the husband dies, if that surviving spouse, in this case the wife, has joint ownership of that house, or has certain rights that they've retained, they may change the titling themselves if they've taken title. They can end up changing the titling. It doesn't have to stay necessarily going through that will then. They could change their will. They could rename new beneficiaries. They could exhaust the asset or the assets, the resources available to them. They could use them all. May not be spent wisely, but they say, hey, I'm going to use it while I can, and I'm going to take this money and spend it on my own children, use it while I can, and die with nothing. So we have to talk about what we want that to look like, because if you go on trusting a surviving spouse, time changes. You could have kids who are bitter, and maybe they're not nice to the stepmommy or the stepdaddy who survived. Maybe they don't see them, you know, for 10 years, because that survivor could go on to live 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, and maybe nobody's nice with each other. Then you kind of lose control of what's going on. So you want to consider time factor. You also want to consider if they've had to upkeep the property. Maybe the surviving spouse was in the home and they ended up taking care of it all, and they bore the burden of all those expenses all those years. So maybe they are entitled to use and abuse whatever assets are left to them. Think that through. What is phase four going to look like? We're going to talk about structuring some strategies around planning for these phases. Phone number 610-758-8810. We only have about 15 minutes left, so if you have questions, give us a call. 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY, where definitely it's you, your source for local news and public affairs, NPR, and music diversity. The time now is 6:47 p.m. Now back to our program.
Okay, folks, if you have questions, now's the time to call. The phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. One of the goals I have, I hope, and I wasn't able to secure anyone for next week, but one of the things I would like to do maybe in the next month or so, maybe early September, is bring an attorney on the show to talk about planning for blended families and what we need to pay attention to in the documents that we're having, working with these attorneys on, whether it's the will, a trust, even powers of attorney, health directives, all of those estate planning documents that you need to have, taking special consideration when we have blended families and the impact of all the decisions that we're making. So thinking through all those phases, you set up like a value statement and set up goals. What do you want each of those phases to look like? And, you know, one of the things, you know, that could come out of this is you may, you know, not be able to reconcile any of this, and you'll find out maybe you shouldn't get married. So it's better to find these things out before you take that plunge. I think it's just, you know, should be required before you get married when you have, especially when you have young children involved. So that is your life phase inventory. Now you need to take a financial inventory. I've talked about that on prior shows. If you want information about that, you can just go to the WDIY.org website, look up the program host, Lori Siebert, and then you'll find a link to prior podcast shows that we've talked about in the future. I think it's probably called financial inventory, maybe, or balance sheet or something like that. And there's information about that. So you want to take your financial inventory. You take that snapshot of your balance sheet. You need to look at all your assets, your liabilities, your beneficiary designations, your cash flow. One spouse may be bringing assets to the relationship, while the other spouse brings cash flow. You need to consider that. So one might be coming with, let's say, a house with no mortgage. They have a house worth $300,000 with no mortgage. That means you're not going to have those house payments like some of us would have. And let's say the other spouse is coming with the salary and all the money. So how do we balance that? It wouldn't be fair to have the one who brings all the cash flow pay all the bills while the other spouse doesn't touch their assets. I've seen it happen. A man married late in life, a woman, and they both had children. She hung on very tight to all of her assets. She did not have to spend a penny. He paid all the bills. He worked down his investments, his savings. He was paying for everything. She was like a princess. He dies, leaving retirement accounts and a house to a wife. They were going to split everything amongst the children. Well, when she inherits his retirement accounts, when she inherits his house, she controls those assets now, and she can do whatever she wants with them. So just because they had gone into the attorney and wrote those wills together, and they were all so nice and were given everything to our children equally, if once she controls those assets, she can change her will, and then she can control who they go to. So she had all of her assets intact. He spent all of his money. He had really almost nothing left. What he did have left went to her. His children ended up with nothing. It had a lot of bad feelings. And I am talking about older adults crying, feeling sad, like dad did not, you know, think about them or take care of them. All right. It may have been his intention. He may not have cared, but he may just have been unaware, clueless, not educated about the impact of the decisions he made, you know, several years before, and how it was going to impact his own children. So was that what he wanted? We don't know. Take the picture, do the financial inventory, do the life phase inventory. Sometimes in a second marriage, we don't know how long we'll live, and we want to take care of our spouse. If you had wanted to provide for your prior marriage children and your surviving spouse, you might have set up something for them to have access during their lifetime to the house investments. And in this case, when I say them, I mean a surviving spouse. So let's say you went into a second marriage. You had these adult children. You had saved your whole life. You did want your children taken care of. But at the same time, you said, you know what? I think I'm going to do some good planning, and I'm going to make sure that my surviving spouse at least can live in the house while she's alive, and I'll give her some income to live on. Well, that might be good. You've provided for that access. The kids will eventually get something. That surviving spouse might live another 30 years. She may end up having to go through all the money to pay for that, the upkeep of the house, the real estate taxes, or whatever. So do you want your children to wait that long? And again, it could be fine that you do. I'm just saying we have to think these things through, that if you really would like to give yourself, your children something sooner, if you were to pass sooner than, you know, the surviving spouse, what are ways you can do that? So what are ways to structure? Well, one way that might seem fairly simple might be life insurance. The thing about life insurance is you have to be, you know, you have to qualify for it. Maybe your health isn't good. Maybe you're too old for it. But let's say you might be able to get life insurance. You might want to look at term life insurance, whole life insurance. You'd have to see what you qualify for. And I'll talk about that again in a minute. You can use joint accounts. You could have some joint accounts with your kids if you want to make sure they have something. You could, you know, as joint, you can use it during your lifetime. And then when you die, if you do it joint with rights of survivorship, then your kids could just automatically get that money. They go in with a death certificate. They pay inheritance tax if it's necessary, and have access to some money. You could do payable on death accounts if you want your children to have something. Beneficiary designations. You could do, you know, maybe 50% to spouse and 25% each to each of my children. You could name trust. You could set up a living trust, a trust while you're alive. You could set up a trust through your will. You could have a trust and then have as a beneficiary designation on a retirement account that the money goes into trust. Again, that money could be used for surviving spouse with income maybe only, principal under discretion. If you do something like that, we want to talk about how that is structured. What if the surviving spouse had access to a trust income during her life, but principal, you know, as needed, and she tried to say she needed it all, and she runs through all the money? So what kinds of protections can you put on a trust for that? Do you need a third-party disinterested trustee? Because what if you name one of your kids the trustee? Well, then you're going to may cause conflict between your child and the surviving spouse. So maybe you don't want that. Maybe you need to get a corporate trustee. Maybe you name your child and the surviving spouse co-trustees. That could still cause some conflict and some bickering. So that might be a case where you might want a corporate trustee, a trust department to take over, be the trustee. They would follow the terms of the document. They would say to the surviving spouse, you have to show that you really need the money. Let me look at your tax returns. Let me look at your financials. Let me look at your other assets. So you put some parameters around the ability and access to a trust. An attorney can help you do all this. So you want to take your financial inventory, your life phase inventory, sit down with a financial advisor and your attorney and say, how do we make this happen? And you have to keep in mind that when you do this, you want to retain control, usually, and you want to make sure that it's set up, that it's flexible, that you can have a lot of options as you move through the phases. Because remember, I said, if you just married someone and you have $1 million and two children, do you want to really give that new spouse the $1 million right off the bat? But maybe that same spouse you end up being married to for 30 or 40 years. Well, then, yeah, maybe you do want them to have the bulk of that money then because they were your life partner. They were there with you for through all the ups and downs. And maybe they were very involved in the raising of your children. So you want your documents to be flexible enough for each of the phases that you go through. Phase one, the near future. Phase two, the future with, you know, no more child support. Phase three was surviving spouse options. Phase four was the heirs. You want your documents, your assets to be structured in such a way that you can go through all the phases. The idea with the life insurance, if you qualify for it, is let's pretend you come into a new marriage with $1 million. And you really would like your kids from your prior marriage to have that. And you have no idea what your future holds with this new spouse. Maybe you can have children, maybe you adopt children, but you want to make sure that your kids are comfortable. They know that you planned for them, you wanted to take care of them. If you are eligible for life insurance, you could do things like set up a life insurance policy payable to those kids and, you know, just pay for the premium on that over your lifetime. So that's one way, and you could value it today, and then that might help keep the waters from being muddied with this new family. So old family, that's what it is. New family, it might just make it a little bit clearer. And then, you know, the children from the prior marriage don't have to worry so much. Again, trust. You can set up a trust for a spouse's lifetime where they get the income annually and principal is needed. Bring in maybe a third party trustee, a disinterested party, give them really good measurements of when a spouse can tap that or not. If there's a home and you own the home and you really want to retain that for your children, maybe it's a vacation home, a family home that's been in the family forever and ever. Sometimes we can lose family homes when we have second marriages. It could end up going to that surviving spouse and then falling to her children. So you may want to keep a home in a trust. There again, maybe certain lifetime rights. But then you want to make sure if there is something in that venue, in that I just lost my word. If you do have something like a vacation home that you want to pass down to your children, you want to make sure that you also have provided enough income and cash flow to take care of that property, you know, real estate taxes, upkeep, and that kind of thing. So flush that all out. And again, you can use trust quite well to affect all of these transfers and the options and the flexibility that you need. So I hope we gave you a good overview tonight, talking about the life phase planning for blended families. Again, a beautiful night. I hope you all enjoy the rest of it. I want to thank Joe for coming in. Sorry we didn't get any calls tonight, Joe, but thank you for coming in. Jeff, thank you for being here as well. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. I haven't decided on a topic for next week yet, so it's going to have to be either a potpourri or some surprise show, but we do send out the announcement to WDIY members. So if you're not a member of WDIY, you can always join at any time by going to the website wdiy.org. One of the member benefits, you get an email that tells you what's coming up on shows. And you can always go on yourfinancialchoices.com as well to get information about the show or prior shows. So thank you so much for being here. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week. Good night.